Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Everyone, welcome to the Dynamic Dojo with Rosita and Robert. It's Sunday, April 6th. Where did all the time go? And I'm joined here at the helm with, you know what, Bob? I almost called you Grandmaster. I don't know why.
Wow.
Grandmaster Robert Deal. How you doing, Bob? I don't know.
I hope Soaking Greg wasn't listening because that could get ugly.
Yeah, it could. And I know exactly why I did it, because I've got like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I got 9 windows open on my thing. And after I started the intro music, I went dinking around in the other tabs, and I just looked at Grandmaster. And I was like, "Oops, we're gonna save that for the Kuntao announcement." So anyway,
it was awful hot down here. It was like 86 degrees today when it was chilly last night. It was a sweltering high temperature today. It was 86.
Oh my gosh, for March or April. Isn't that like normal for South King County? See, Southern.
L.A. County, yes, it is.
Yeah,
yes, it is.
King County.
It was just,
not
it was
King
windy
County.
And cold last night, so I didn't expect it. You know, a friend of ours posted something this week, and I have to tell everybody, remember, my opinion or Seafood's opinion does not reflect the opinion of Blog Talk Radio or anybody else on the planet. But, manufacturers are starting to make things because we're getting lazier. You know, Listerine, it wasn't enough that we had to swish Listerine and gargle it and spit it out. They made dissolvable strips that we placed on our tongue, right? We don't even have to chew anymore. We just put it on our tongue and it melts. There is this thing that actually angered me this week. You know the bottles that they put in for if you have a rabbit or a hamster filled with water?
Oh, yeah.
You hang the bottle in the cage, right? There
right.
is something, and you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. You saw that, didn't you?
Yes, I did, and it like pissed me off to no end. But go ahead and tell our listeners, please.
It's called the Crib Dribbler.
Oh, God.
It is just like a bottle that you hang from a rabbit's cage. You hang it in your baby's crib, and they're to crawl over to it and just drink out of it. I was like, wow. I was dumbfounded.
Yeah, that's crazy. And it's like, okay, let me back up here because it pissed me off because if you're going to put a baby dribbler in the crib, does that mean you're too dang lazy to pick up your baby, you know, and give them their bottle, you know, like you should, you know, human contact,
right.
You know what I mean? It's like, come on. You know, I mean, what's that for? For like, you know, if you're watching TV and having a beer in the next room, give me a break, you know?
Yeah. Or don't want to get up at 2:00 in the morning.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't have kids, but, you know, I helped raise my nieces and stuff like that. And it's kind of like, you know, which is why my sister and her family and my family, like, moved into the same big house together. So that way there was no stress as to, you know, who's watching whom and who's doing what, you know, that kind of thing. And there was always someone with the girls, always, you know. Oh, Kehlani's hungry. Well, okay, Auntie's going to feed her, you know. Oh, you know, Mom's got to go. Don't worry, I'm here, you know, I'll babysit, you know. And if you can't do that, then don't have a kid, period.
Right,
you know?
Right,
the dribbler
exactly.
Just pissed me off. Oh, man. But for our listeners out there, if you have any other 7-677-0699. And stay tuned after our first segment because our guest today is going to be Grandmaster Daniel Harmon of Kogaru Ninjutsu. So if you have any questions about Kogaru or ninjutsu in general, you know, please call in. And I just got a Facebook message from Grandmaster Harmon. He says that the number's not going through because he wants to listen. 347-677-0699. I'm going to tell him to please try again. Please try again.
Well, there was a caller that just hung up, so maybe I wonder if that was him.
Oh, I didn't. I guess I didn't see it. Okay, so 347-677-0699. Give us a call, listeners, a little bit later, probably about anywhere between 40 to 55 minutes from now, we'll be bringing on Grandmaster Harmon. All right, so let's get into birthdays and shout-outs, and let's get this fun evening started, shall we?
Very cool. Absolutely. Well, today is my first Jeet Kune Do instructor's birthday, Master Guru Sifu Mark Stewart, which is one of Tetlukai guys. It's mm-hmm. also Grandmaster, and this is interesting that we're having Dan Harmon on the show today because it's his ninjutsu grandmaster's birthday today also. A good friend of ours. Daniel J. Vena, a good friend of the show's, which also has a show, I believe, doesn't he, Rusty?
Yes. Yes, he's got...
Oh, very cool.
I forgot the name of the show. I want to say it's the Power Hour. The Karate Power Hour, but I could be wrong. I think I'm mixing that up with, I don't know who I'm mixing it up with.
Right. I know you're mixing it up. I just can't remember who has a Power Hour. But it's also one of our, actually, the one guy who's done more guest co-host spots than anybody else. That's Wayne Riley. His son Ian turns another year older today. And you have some birthdays as well to put shout-outs to.
Yeah, I'd like to send a shout out to my beautiful niece, the daughter of my half sister, Kathy Canavan. Her birthday is on the 8th, which is this Tuesday. I'd also like to send another shout out to my friend at the South St. George, the historical fencing school here in Seattle, Washington, Mr. Dane Hendrickson. His birthday is on Friday, the 11th. And last but not least, my longtime Tai Chi student, Susan Rhodes, and her birthday is on the 12th. So for everyone out there that's having a birthday this week, even though we hadn't mentioned you, here's a special tune for you. Happy birthday, everybody. I always like listening to this. I can't stop laughing when it gets to the end because it sounds like Mickey Mouse.
It does. And I also want to put another shout out there to our dear friends. I posted on Facebook today, Daryl Vidal and William Christopher Ford. Daryl was in the original Karate Kid movie. He mm-hmm. doubled for Camarita in the crane position on the stump, mm-hmm. and William Christopher Ford would play the bad guy in Karate Kid 3. I saw both of them. I saw both Karate Kid and Karate Kid 3 today because there's a couple stations that if they run one, they sort of do a marathon of all of them in a row. And so I told them to expect their residual checks in the mail any day now.
That's right. Right on. Very cool. You know, I was telling a student today about the original Karate Kid because I just made mention of it to some of the older kids in Wushu class today. And a younger kid goes, well, what's Karate Kid? And I looked over into the lobby area and I looked at his mom and I said, well, I think you should watch the Karate Kid. And the mom looked at me and gave me a thumbs up and nodded her head. And I'm like, okay. So,
but not
more residual
the one with
there.
Jaden Smith.
No, the original one with Ralph
the
Macchio.
The original, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, as I mean, we would look at Karate Kid now as being campy, because, you know, a lot of the kids today are so used to the special effects and the CGI and the crazy stunts and all, and right. all of that. But, you know, in the 80s, you know, Ralph Macchio pretty much did his stunts, you know, and when Daryl was standing in for Pat Morita and stuff like that, you know, those were the only things that, that were, you know, I guess artificial, quote unquote, like it wasn't Pat Morita doing the thing. It was Daryl Vidal. And,
right.
You know, and it was Daryl's thing with the crane kick and the crane pose and stuff like that, that really made the movie what it is. And on top of that, you know, the lessons that Mr. Miyagi had in there, you know, I think any kid should watch it. Yeah. So I hope he's watching it tonight, because I hope he learned a lot. All right. Well, let's get on to our shout-outs. I know we've got some great events coming up here in the next few months, so I'm going to hand the mic over to you so you can talk to us a little bit about Dragon Fest.
Well, first I want to put another shout-out to the museum. We had Art Camacho Night last night. Great event. I hung out with a lot of good people I haven't seen in a while and met a lot of new friends. And it was funny, I saw a person who was my guest host in the latter part of last year, Kimo Kiyoki, when you were gone, and saw him last night, and he introduced me to people I had already known, but he's a movie guy. He was in, like, The Rundown with The Rock and Sean William Scott and those guys, and he was the guy I told everybody, yeah, this guy really holds his age, because he's, like, 55 and looks like he's 30.
Mm-hmm.
I hate him. He's not like, oh, it's gray hair. I'm losing my hair. You know, I told my landlord the other day, you know, my daughter's sink's clogging, and we'd only been here like 3 weeks, and they're like blaming her already. And we're like, no, that was already there. Then, but they started talking about, oh, well, women with their hair and everything else. And I told my wife this, and my wife says, ah, you're jealous, aren't you? I'm like, yeah, you suck. But anyway, yes, Dragon Fest. We'll get back to Dragon Fest real quick. I keep saying every week, they've got many, many, many sections. They've got like 64 booths now. I think it's probably got to be designed differently. They're going to bring maybe different guests in at different times instead of having them all there the entire six hours. Dragon mm-hmm. Fest will be held this year on May 18th. Which is a Sunday. It'll be held from 1 to 7 p.m. at the Burbank Holiday Inn in beautiful downtown Burbank. And in the history section, you will have such stars as Lorenzo Lamas, Cynthia Rothrock, James Hong, Art Camacho, Takabota, Terry Ogawa Wong, which I also saw last night, Richard Norton, Peter Kwong, Bill Riyazaki, Eric Lee, Rodney Kakiyama, and Gerald Dakamura. In the author section, you'll have Doug Wong, Alan Woodman, Benny the Jet Urquidez, Peter Sugarfoot Cunningham, Simon Ree, Lambert Chung, Sal Kahiwalu. I think I got closer this week on his name.
Yeah, you did.
Don Baird, John Crang, Steve Sexton, Myriad Publications. In the film section, it'll be Fumio Demura, Shin Koyamada, Donnie Williams, Gorilla Pictures, Johnny Ray Gasca from the film The Gathering, The Stunt People, CNC Movie Factory, Show V's, LLC. In the arts and crafts section, you'll have Paul Wee, Mel's Props, The Artistry of Ed Parker Jr., My Scent Image, Justin Waggle Martial Arts Strategy Game, Halas Jewelry, 2K Customs, Tradition Shirts, Jerome Liu's Hyperactive Monkey Book. In the special effects section, you'll have Neil Wynn, Eric De La Vega, Christopher Hernandez, Neil Kinnamore, Norman Myers, Calvin Lowe, Amber Skoransky, Alfred Perez, Koji Omura, George Gasper, Jason Krager, Rick Czar, Scott Fields, Bruce Mitchell, Hiroshi Katagiri. And in the vendor section, you'll have Sidekick Publications, Dynamic Dojo Radio, Valley Martial Arts Flies Kill Combat Instruments, Pacific Association of Women in the Martial Arts, PAMA, Worldwide Martial Arts Council, United Martial Arts for Christ, Filipino Arts with Felix Roles, and the Masters Hall of Fame. Wow. I do
wow.
that every week. I get more tired every time I read it.
It seems like it's getting longer. That's quite a lineup of vendors and celebrities and arts and crafts and just a whole slew of booths. So get your tickets now, folks, for Dragon Fest. I mean, you know, this is the first year that Dragon Fest is back. It went kind of off the grid back in, I think, 2009, and now it's back and brought back by Michael Matsuda of the Martial Arts History Museum, and he wants to make this bigger than ever. In its heyday, Dragon Fest was the largest martial arts convention on the West Coast, if not the United States. I don't know about any of the other martial arts conventions on the other coast, but as far as I know, it was the largest convention on the West Coast. So, you know, let's help make it the biggest again. And that's Dragon Fest, May 18th. Now, speaking of PAMA, which is going to have a booth alongside us, I hope, at Dragon Fest, I want to kind of put a plug for the Pacific Association of Women Martial Artists. We're having our annual training camp in Oregon, in Turner, Oregon, at Aldersgate Retreat, September 19th through the 22nd. We just made the cutoff date for taking applications for teacher trainers. So that's already done. You can't apply anymore. Sorry, ladies. But we did get a bunch of great applicants. Now it's a matter of us making a decision as to which teachers we're going to choose for our camp this year. And this camp is open to any woman, older, younger, teenagers that study martial arts or are interested in getting into martial arts. For younger people, we do plan on having a youth coordinator there to help make things a little bit more fun, you know, amongst a bunch of, you know, old geezer adults like us, right?
Right.
And we'll also have a demonstration exhibition that will be open to the public for a small fee. But for the most part, the PAMA camp is run by women for women. So sorry, guys. No guys are going to be allowed to watch or train inside the classes because this is one of those rare instances where women teaching women and only women. But when it comes to the exhibition and the following social hour, anyone is invited. So, you know, please consider coming out and watching some of the United States' greatest women martial artists perform. It'll be great.
Cool.
Awesome. Let's see, what else do we got here for events? We've got the 2014 United Kingdom National Sport, Circus, and Performance Whip Cracking Convention. Whew, say that in one breath. So that's why they're just calling it WhipCon. Now, before I go on about this particular thing, I do want to remind our callers, because we've got a couple of callers on the line, that we're going to – I want to answer – one of the calls after I mentioned this whip cracking convention. But if you're calling to speak with Grandmaster Dan Harmon, we're not going to have Grandmaster Harmon on until the second half of our show, which will probably be in about another 20 to 25 minutes. But I will answer the 541 call from Oregon here in just a sec. So hang tight, area code 541. All right, so the WhipCon 2014 in the United Kingdom is Sunday, April 13th. That's next Sunday. To book tickets, you want to go to the main site at www.bjc2014.co.uk. And there are workshops for beginners and advanced people. Now, a lot of people go whip cracking. You know, there's beginner and advanced. How hard is it to crack a whip? It's actually harder than you think, folks. It's not like snapping a towel. A lot of, you know, every time I hand someone a whip, they go, I know how to use this, and they snap it like a towel. And then they wonder why they hit themselves in the face. And I go, didn't I tell you not to do that? There's actually science to this, and there's going to be beginners workshops. that deal a lot with safety. There's also going to be demonstrations of basic craps.
Oh, God.
Basic cracks. You'll be instructed in the basic whip cracking techniques, such as the coachman's crack, reverse coachman's crack, figure eight, and stuff like that. You can also get one-to-one instruction. There's also group practice and other tricks and tips. And then there's advanced workshops that can happen depending on the interest and the demand, precision target cracking, two-handed whip cracking, multiple crack combinations, the use of a 20-foot bullwhip, how to use longer whips, using stock whips, Hungarian whips, hybrid performance whips, staff whips, which is also known as a bullock whip. Imagine just a big whip on a big staff and you got a bullock whip. Doing fire whip and other types of circus stunts, snake whips, candle snuffing, the whole nine yards. You know, and if I lived in the UK, I'd be so there. But that's kind of my excuse. In reality, I just can't afford it. So anyway... All right, so that's it for that. That's the WhipCon UK, Sunday, April 13th. Go to the site, bjc2014.co.uk. Now let's go to the phones here real quick to answer a question, I guess. So this call is coming from Oregon, area code 501. You're on Dynamic Dojo. What can we do for you?
Hello, my name is Jason Wink, and I was actually calling in on behalf of Dan C. Harmon, his student.
Oh, you're one of his students?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Very cool. Well, you know, if you want to hang on and listen to this show for the next, 15, 20 minutes, we're going to have Grandmaster Dan on after this first segment. Would that be okay?
Yeah, sounds good.
All righty, so just hang tight, and we're going to mute your mic here and have fun listening to the rest of the first segment. Awesome.
Now,
so,
Rusty, I do want to point out that this is for whip crackers, whip enthusiasts.
Yes.
Don't think
Thank
there's
you.
Some weird thing going on.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to get into that. Thank you for reminding me. This is for circus sport and performance. So, if you're a stunt person and you want the skill – of learning how to crack a whip for movies and stuff like that, because you never know, right? You just never know. This is great. You know, in fact, nowadays a lot of stunt people are more and more are getting into the kind of the alternative skills such as whip cracking, knife throwing, archery, that kind of thing. So that way they can do their own stunts as opposed to, having someone else do it. A lot of people are really getting into the whip cracking and stuff. I've got my own group here in Seattle, a little plug for my group that meets every third Sunday of the month at the local circus school here in the Seattle School of Acrobatics and New Circus Arts. And it's free. So, just come on down. Find me on Facebook if you want to learn how to crack a whip. Come join us every third Sunday, and it'll be fun. We've got whips for you to borrow. All right. Let's quickly go through these other seminar and event announcements so we can get through all the rest of the news so we can get to Grandmaster Dan. All right. So this is a seminar for Ron Kozakowski's PSDTC school, and this is a Kuntao seminar. And the subject of this Kuntao seminar is how to protect yourself when confronted in worst-case scenario situations. And this is taught by Master Ron Kozakowski. It's going to be on Saturday, April 27th at 10:30 a.m., goes until approximately 4:30 or 5 p.m., at the Practical Self-Defense Training Center at 847 Hamilton Avenue. That's on Route 69. Waterbury, Connecticut. And if you go to this website, psdtc.com/events/Kuntao, that's kuntao.seminar.htm, you'll be able to get directions on how to get there. You want to bring your own lunch. And this is for anyone that's curious about Kuntao. You'll be learning some typical defenses and hand movements of monitoring the opponent's hands. And the seminar will also show you how to be there before your opponent is when confronted with or without a weapon. You're going to learn the step-by-step progression that it takes to gain the reflexes to pull off what you learn here at the workshop. There are many steps to bring you to the point of random play. You will then learn the vicious counters to your opponent's attacks found in this style of Kung Tao. Now, size and strength does not matter once you master this style. There are some very violent fighting methods when really needed most within this style. This workshop will change your views on all ranges of confrontation for the objective of self-preservation. Now, Kung Tao, for people out there, it's a blade-oriented martial arts style. And its fighting methodology is pretty much as Filipino as you can get. You know, do what works, you know. The Filipino weapon-based methodology of deception and good evasive footwork is key when it comes to Kung Tao, as opposed to stand your ground and blocking. Footwork is very important and can get very scientific in the Filipino and Asian martial arts style. So go ahead and check out that seminar. And is there more? No, I think that's it. Wow, I was gonna go, well, how many more seminars do we got? All right. Well, I think we get to move on to Health News. All right. Now, this really makes me happy. This week's Health News story is about how drinking coffee is linked to decreased liver cirrhosis death risk. Now, this doesn't mean, folks, that you can go out, that you should go out and drink until you just go like ape and then think drinking coffee is going to help that. So this isn't an excuse to, like, you know, go on binge drinking every night. Okay.
I don't need an excuse.
Now, the cirrhosis is the 11th cause of death in the U.S., and it kills like 32,000 people a year. But now, researchers are suggesting that drinking two or more cups of coffee every day can reduce the risk of death from liver cirrhosis by 66%. Now, when it comes to medical percentages, that's a lot. So, now this particular study was published in the Journal of Hepatology, and the study adds to growing evidence that coffee really does have real health benefits. Medical News Today recently published a feature on how caffeine affects our health, listing benefits such as reduction of liver cancer and decreased risk of suicide. Another study recently suggested that consuming about 200 milligrams of caffeine each day could boost long-term memory. However, in this latest study, Dr. Woon Pwee Ko from Duke University's Graduate Medical School in Singapore and the National University of Singapore led a team of researchers who investigated how coffee might help minimize deaths caused by cirrhosis. The World Health Organization says that this condition is responsible for 1.3 of the total deaths worldwide. So for coffee to be able to help by 66%, that's a lot of people. Now, Dr. Ko notes that their study focused on the effects of coffee, alcohol, and black tea, green tea, and soft drinks, basically any drink that has caffeine in it, and its effects on cirrhosis. However, only coffee decreased these risks, while heavy alcohol use, perhaps unsurprisingly, increased the risk of death from cirrhosis. Now, apparently this study provides impetus to further evaluate coffee as a therapeutic agent. So to further investigate, the researchers used a prospective population-based study called the Singapore Chinese Health Study, which involved over 63,000 Chinese subjects living in Singapore who were between 45 and 74 years old. These participants provided researchers with data on their diet, their lifestyle, and their medical histories through interviews and questionnaires between the years of 1993 and 1998. And the researchers followed up with them for an average of 15 years. And the researchers found that a total of 14,928 of the study participants died during that time. And out of those people, 114 of them died from cirrhosis. Now, the results show that individuals who drank at least 20 grams of ethanol or alcohol each day had a greater risk of cirrhosis mortality compared to non-drinkers. Meanwhile, coffee intake was linked with a lower risk of death from cirrhosis, and the researchers note this was particularly the case for non-viral hepatitis-related cirrhosis. Wow. Pretty wild.
Wow. So you know how your family starts to think about you, because one time I went for my last full physical and I had blood work done, and the doctor says, oh, okay, your liver's good. And I went home, I told my wife, and she says, you've got to be kidding me.
With as much as you drink? I'll be honest, the way that I used to drink in my 20s and early 30s and stuff, you know, I should have been worried about it, but you know, then I don't know what happened. All of a sudden I'm like,
right.
I don't want it anymore. It's gross. But if you want further information about this study, I'll be posting this on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. And there's also other clickable links in there about the other studies about coffee. So pretty cool. And that's it for my health news. I think it's time for Bob.
Weird news.
All right. This is as weird as it gets. The title of this article is Squirrel Cooking Couple Sued for $2 million. I
okay,
almost
wait.
Put my finger up to my mouth like that Mike Myers character in Austin Powers.
So, okay, I want to know if it's squirrels cooking people or people cooking squirrels, but go ahead.
Wow, you're right. That could be read either way. No, let me start this. A couple with unusual dining preferences might have to pay a hefty sum after they were hit with a $2 million lawsuit seeking damages from a Michigan apartment fire. It all started when, I'm not even going to try to pronounce this guy's name, when the gentleman reportedly used a blowtorch to burn off a squirrel's fur on the balcony of his Holland Township apartment in October 2012.
Okay.
It's like, are you serious? Using a blowtorch. Oh. When he went inside to prepare the carcass to eat, he left the torch unattended, according to MLive. He shared the critter controversy. Did I read that right there? No, I'm sorry. I skipped a line for some reason. He shared. No, I was right. I hate when that happens. Let's see. He shared the apartment with then-girlfriend Barbara Pello, who told the police she only found out about the critter controversy and planned meal when she woke to find her boyfriend screaming and battling a fire out on the deck. The fire spread, causing serious damage to the apartment complex and displacing 29 renters. Though none were injured since the incident, two insurance companies have filed lawsuits against the couple. Clearview Apartments Insured Travelers Indemnity Company is seeking reimbursement for $2 million in damages from Pello and Auto Owners Insurance Company.
Wow.
It's seeking $57,000. So these two companies are suing for $2,057,000. From the Pello and her boyfriend to cover costs of several tenants, damaged property, according to MLive. According to Wood TV, the suit against them says that under the terms of the lease, they are responsible for fire and water damage caused by firefighters battling the fire.
Whoa.
But the tenants were never charged with a crime.
Whoa.
Like arson or anything else. Yeah.
I didn't,
but,
wow.
That's crazy.
Squirrel? Really?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I know squirrels are edible and stuff like that. I don't know about city squirrels. I don't know if I want to just, like, go outside and, like, grab a squirrel because God knows what they've been in, like, if they're in the city, you know?
Yeah, they bite.
and they bite. And they're probably rabid and junk
yeah.
like that. Ugh. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's interesting. Well, just
that
be careful, you guys, if you guys are going to eat squirrel. Just be careful. Take it outside.
Yeah, be careful. You don't burn your house down. So on with entertainment news.
Okay.
The title is Corey Feldman just got some awesome news. Richard Donner told TMZ that they were making a Jesus.
Take two.
That they were making a sequel to the movies, The Goonies, that was actually made 28 years ago.
Hmm.
And
I
wants to
that.
Bring back the entire cast. Oh, so I. Absolutely. That was in my early 20s, damn it. But Donner wants to bring back the entire cast. Donner was outside signing autographs in Beverly Hills when he dropped the bombshell. Genuinely surprising photographers when he said it. What Donner didn't say, whether he'll recast the main characters and bring in Corey, Josh Brolin, Sean Astin, and Data for cameos, or if these guys will actually play the same role 28 years later. A gnarly but interesting thought. Goonies never die. You know what's funny? A lot of these movies that are coming back, like The A-Team, Starsky and Hutch, not The Incredible Hulk, of course, but these movies that are coming back that were TV series or other movies or like Karate Kid, where they're bringing back the original actors in cameo, like at the end of Starsky and Hutch, when Paul Michael Glazer and David Soul drove up in a car, or like 21 Jump Street that had Holly Robinson Pete and Johnny Depp and Peter DeLuise as cameos.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is actually quite interesting and maybe a good storyline in there somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, that should be interesting. I'll have to check it out. And here's another movie I want to check out. I haven't seen it yet, but I just want to place a shout-out about it. Tony Jaa, he's back. He's that guy from Ong Bak. So he's back with his latest movie. It got released overseas in last year, and it's making its way here. It's The Protector 2. And according to the plot, once again, Cam's pet elephant has been abducted, and he must fight anyone in his way to find the elephant. And there's a bunch of mixed reviews about this about this movie on IMDb. Some people say it's got like too much CGI. Some people say it's like the same stunts that Tony Jaa did in the first Protector movie or in Ong Bak. But you know what? It's Tony Jaa. You know, and I give him kudos for having what I consider to be the longest run-on, no camera cut fight scene in movie history. Have you seen it? It's amazing. It like goes on and on and on and on, and there is no camera cut. It's just a cameraman, you know, with his harness on and just chasing Tony Jaa up stairs and balconies and like that, all the way up to the top of a building, and he's fighting everybody, and it's a continuous scene. It's great. I forgot what movie it's in, but go check it out. I'm going to go ahead and find the trailer for it and post it up on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. All right. Yay, and that was entertainment news. And last but not least, before we take a short break and get to our guest, Grandmaster Daniel Harmon, I want to do a new thing. Normally, I had done trivia of the week. I want to do a brain buster. I want to do a logic puzzle. And if you get the right answer and you are the first caller to give us the right answer, you get to win a spot on the Dynamic Dojo radio show to be a guest co-host, or you can just be a guest or suggest a guest and be a guest co-host. So anyhow, our number here is 347-677-0699. Put your listening ears on and your thinking cap, because here is the brain buster of the week. All right. There are three boxes. One is labeled apples. Another is labeled oranges. The last one is labeled apples and oranges. Now, you know that each is labeled incorrectly. You may ask to pick one fruit from one box, which you get to choose, but you have to label the boxes correctly after. So how can you label the boxes correctly? Our phone number, 347-677-0699. If you've got the correct answer, give us a call. Now, does anyone need me to repeat it? Do you want me to repeat it, Barb, or are we good?
I would repeat it, yeah, for our dumbbells.
Okay. There are three boxes. One is labeled apples. Another is labeled oranges. And the last box is labeled apples and oranges. You know that each box is labeled incorrectly. You may ask to pick one fruit from one box of which you choose, but you have to label all of the boxes correctly after that. So, how can you label the boxes correctly? Give us a call, 347-677-0699, or you can get on our chat board on the Blog Talk Radio show marquee. Just scroll down a little bit from the blogtalkradio.com show marquee if you're listening live on Blog Talk Radio, and you'll find the little chat box there. Go ahead and type in your answer, and if you're the first one, you get to win a stint being a guest co-host with us weirdos.
No, I'm sorry. If they're good enough to get this, they're too smart to be on our show.
That's right. You know, what's funny is that when I was looking for these, I wanted to look for a site that would ask the question but not give the answer right underneath it. And I was close, but my approach was incorrect. So, yeah. But anyway, I'm not going to give away the hint. So let's go ahead and take a short break, about 2 minutes. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with Grandmaster Dan Harmon of Koga Ryu Ninjutsu. We'll be right back right after this.
Need to get some rest. This is the worst headache ever.
Right arm's all tingly all of a sudden. Must have slept on it last night.
I keep losing my balance. These old bones need some exercise.
Granddaddy, what you just said doesn't even make sense. It sounds like gibberish.
Signs like these could be more than what they seem. They could be a sign of stroke.
Sudden weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg.
Sudden trouble with vision in one or both eyes.
Sudden trouble walking or difficulty with balance.
Or a sudden intense headache that comes out of nowhere.
If you or someone you know has any of these symptoms, don't wait. Call 911 immediately. You could make a difference in someone's life, someone you love, maybe even your own.
Time lost is brain lost.
Find out more at powertoendstroke.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Five tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Experience the history, beauty, culture, and tradition of the martial arts at the world's first Martial Arts History Museum. Located in the city of Burbank, California, visitors will enjoy learning how Asian history became part of American history. For more information, visit our website at mamuseum.com.
Hello, everyone. Join Hunchy Daniel Hecht on Kickin' It Old School on KCAA 1050 AM on Tuesdays at 2 o'clock. He will bring you more great interviews with legends, leaders, and people that have made a difference in the martial arts and in people's lives. You can call in with questions or comments for our guests at 909-888-5222. So join Hunchy Daniel Hecht on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. here on KCAA 1050 AM, Kickin' It Old School.
And now, on with the show.
All right, and we are back. If you're just now tuning in, this is Dynamic Dojo with Restita and Robert. We're airing on the Seiken Network on blogtalkradio.com. And our phone number, if you have any questions for our guest, Grandmaster Dan Harmon, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. Now, Sifu Bob, I was just listening to that commercial about Hunchy Dan's show, Kicking It Old School, and he's not on Tuesdays anymore. He's on Wednesdays at what time?
No, he is on, well, he's on his show on Thursdays at 6 o'clock, but that's when he goes live, but he is on our network, the Seiken Network, this radio station, Wednesdays also at 6.
Oh, okay. So he's on Thursdays. Okay. Yeah, when I listen to the commercial, I'm like, that's not right.
No. And, of course, when you listen to our station, you can't call in because it'll be pre-recorded, because you can.
Yeah. But if you go to KCAA 1050, is it KCAA1050.com? I don't remember, but look it up.
I believe it is, yes.
Yeah, KCAA1050. Look up his schedule for Thursdays, and you'll be able to find Hunchy Dan's show there. It's a lot like our show. Awesome. All right. So before we bring in our guest, I just kind of want to do just a really short introduction of our guest, Grandmaster Dan Harmon. Grandmaster Dan has over 35 years of self-defense training in multiple styles. He's a grandmaster in Kogaryu Ninjutsu and was trained by the Honzawa family from Tokyo, Japan. Grandmaster Harmon spent 1 year studying the psychology of PTSD under different psychologists, to better understand rape victims and to be better equipped to help them in their self-defense training. Mr. Harmon is also an expert in over 25 different weapons, and he also enjoys Japanese history of any kind, but he also loves the history of Kogaryu Ninjutsu and the mysteries contained within it. Grandmaster Harmon also tries to live by the old Japanese culture as much as he can. So, listeners and Sifu Bob, please join me in welcoming Grandmaster Dan Harmon to the show. Grandmaster, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Well,
we're doing great. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule to join us today.
I really appreciate you mentioning about all the work that I put in to learning about PTSD. Because I was abused as a child quite severely, and abuse of any form is something that's dear to me. I don't like seeing people being abused, and I don't like seeing people becoming victims to it. So I have a lot of students that are rape victims, and it's a lot of instructors teach self-defense to rape victims, but they don't take the time to study the psychology of PTSD. Because it's a little that something as simple as having a Mountain Dew soda bottle in the dojo can trigger that student's PTSD, and a lot of these instructors don't understand it. So they've really got to get to know what the triggers are for their students that are rape victims.
Indeed. And I want to talk a little bit more about your philosophy on that a little bit later in our discussion, because that is very important. And you're right that, you know, a lot of people are teaching self-defense primarily just on the technique side without understanding the psychology behind it. And, you know, without that understanding, the technique, you know, might itself bring on, you know, a flashback. So I'd really love to get your philosophy on that a little bit later. It looks like we've got some of your students on the line with us as well. Would it be okay if I bring them on, Grandmaster?
Yeah, Yes, please.
Sure. Okay. Let's see if I labeled the lines right. I've got area code 541, and this is Jason, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm on.
Oh. All righty. And we've got area code 928. Thanks for being so patient, 928. Who's this?
This is Crystal.
Crystal, and you're a student of Grandmaster Dan's also?
I'm a student and also his niece.
Oh, awesome. Hi, Crystal.
Wow, okay, awesome.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, I'm glad to have all three of you on the line to talk about your training and Kogaru Ninjutsu and stuff. And for our listeners out there, if you have any questions whatsoever for Grandmaster Dan about the psychology of PTSD or ninjutsu training in general or any martial art questions for him, give us a call, 347-677-0699. Grandmaster Dan, what we like to start off getting our listeners introduced to is each of our guests' background in the martial arts. So can you take a little bit of time and tell our listeners a little bit about how you got started in martial arts?
Well, I was adopted at age 5, and I was adopted into a very abusive home. I hear that the adoption process is a lot more better screened now than what it was back in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
So I first started learning about martial arts from a TV show called Kung Fu, starring David Carradine.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know how to defend myself against my father because I was being so severely abused by my adopted parents as a whole. I went into this little gas station that had a pinball machine in there, and it tilted on me, so I kicked it. So the Oriental guy told me to come over to town and put my hand 1 inch above the counter, and he popped out a pair of rubber nunchucks, smacked me on the hand, said, leave my store for 1 hour. I came back in after an hour. Instead of going to the pinball machine, I asked him if he knew some of that Kung Fu Chop Suey stuff. I didn't know what it was or anything. I didn't know what that was. And he said, yeah. So I told him about what was going on with me at home, and I had a black eye at the time. So that was a pretty strong convincer for him. So he started teaching me karate out of his backyard, and for the first month, I was nothing more than his son's punching bag, but he realized in the process that I was actually learning things. So he said, well, you're either really stupid or you really want to learn. And I said, I really want to learn. So he started teaching me. And that's how I got into martial arts. From then on, I started finding whoever I could to teach me whatever they had to teach me. And eventually I came across Mark Romano while I was in the group home, and he was studying off the Hanzawa. He had studied off the Hanzawa family in Tokyo, Japan. And so we did after I learned everything I could off of Mark Romano and the Hanzawa family through correspondence, it got to a point where we both became equals, and we started training off of VHS tapes well before mm-hmm. there were DVDs. And periodically, I would use some of my resources to have a friend put me on his freight ship to travel me over to Japan to test, to make sure that I was doing good, test off the Hanzawa family.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why he shipped is because I didn't have a passport.
Oh.
Yep. So I traveled illegally back and forth to Japan, and by the time I was 22, the Hanzawa family said that there was nothing more I could learn off of them, that I had learned everything there was that they could teach me, everything that there was to learn. I started sending videos to them of some new things that I had come up with and some notes and stuff like that, and they said, well, you've taken what we've taught you further than what we have taught you, further than what was taught to us.
Mm-hmm.
And years after that, I started saying, well, everyone wants to have see me with a certificate and everything to prove what my knowledge is and everything like that. And I thought that, I'd just be, instructor level. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that how much I had learned was that much. Mm-hmm. When they took the certificate, it said grandmaster on it. And I about fainted. I was like, this
wow.
got to be a mistake. So I called them up and said, no, you're a grandmaster. I'm a grandmaster. You learned everything that we learned. But you surpassed us. I'm like, you've got to be kidding. The
wow.
great thing was,
wow,
honored me by appearing at my first wedding. He came all the way down from Tokyo, Japan, to be at my wedding in Seattle, Washington.
Wow. That's awesome. Wow, like, just like that, you just get this, you know, Menkyo Kaiden certificate in the mail, and you're like, what? What? Wow.
I have no clue. I have no clue.
That's incredible.
I thought I was in the middle of the totem pole, and I was happy with that. And now I've got all these people that call me Master Harm and everything. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that.
Mm-hmm.
The hilarity that I got on Facebook is well beyond any of my friends have, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around that. I went to pay my phone bill last year downtown. I normally pay by mail. And a cop came up to me, and I thought I was in trouble. And he said, aren't you Grandmaster Dancy Harmon? And I was like, yeah. He said, can I get your autograph and a picture with you? I was like,
wow.
I went back home where I teach my classes, because I teach my classes out of my home, pretend like they did way back when, or I teach it at my students' home or in the park. And I talked to some of my students, and I said, this cop just asked me for my autograph. And they're all like, well, don't you realize? You're famous. So I was like, no, I'm not. I was like, yeah, you are. You're known all around the world. Everyone knows who you are. I'm like, no. So I immediately called up Frank Dukes in a panic, talked to him over the phone, and he helped me through it, and he still helps me through it. He's become
very,
a good friend. I love the guy.
Very cool.
Now,
did you study under Grandmaster Dukes also, or?
I didn't meet Frank Dukes until after all the popularity started. He called because there was a rumor going around, I guess, on the internet that I was challenging him to a fight,
and I'm
not one to challenge him to a fight. But he was very polite, and then he turned around and asked me the question, and I said, well, I don't even know who you are. And he's like, you never seen Bloodsport? And I was like, yeah, I've seen Bloodsport. What does that have to do with you? And he's like, well, I was like, oh, really? I didn't know that. And we've been friends ever since. He's a great guy.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
absolutely.
Grandmaster Dukes does Kogaru also, correct?
Yes,
I'm guessing.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was guessing there. I was like, oh, I think he does Kogaru. I better get that right.
I mean, because I've taken what I've learned. Now, what I've learned, my sensei trained, I can't ever pronounce his name correctly, something Inu, who was trained off of Seikyo Fujita. What I've done is kind of like what Frank has done, is we've taken the knowledge that we have learned and advanced upon it in our own way. My time in the Guardian Angels, I've learned that a lot of the techniques and a lot of styles that I learned were too robotic and too much time to execute. So I started studying a little bit on physics and came to the realization that most techniques take 0.06 seconds to execute. So I started looking at ways to shorten the technique down or eliminate it, not use it at all, not pass it on at all, so that the technique could be executed in as little as time as 0.03 seconds. Because in that 0.3 seconds that you've wasted using a classical technique, the person could do a counter on you. And when you're in a life and death situation like we were out there in the Guardian Angels in Hollywood, California,
mm-hmm.
you don't have time to be wasting in those split seconds. Those split
mm-hmm.
seconds, you could stab, you could get hit with a crowbar, whatever. And I've got plenty of scars all over my body from saving people's lives out there on the streets, especially when the LA riots broke out.
Oh, so you were an angel during that time. Wow, that's I was gonna say that's cool, but yeah, I don't know if it's cool or if it's like, oh my gosh, that's dangerous.
It was a war zone. We had like two or three Guardian Angels at that time that had just came back from Iraq. And I'm not dismissing what the military does for us or anything. I got a lot of students that are in the military and their spouses. But they said they would rather go back to Iraq than to be here in a war fighting their own people, because over there, that is, over there, at least they're not fighting their own people.
Yeah.
And that carried a lot of my shoulders, like, wow, you would rather go back to Iraq? I mean, there's bombs, RPGs, you know, people strapped with explosives, car bombs, all that stuff, but you would rather go back there. You know, so that made me realize how heavy of a situation it was. And the thing that really bothers me is I appreciate the fact that, you know, World War II veterans and Korean veterans and so on, and Vietnam veterans consider me a brother-in-arms to them as a veteran of the L.A. riots. But what really bothers me about the L.A. riots is that there are so many people right now on the Internet talking about the government and how they don't like the way that the government's going and how people should take up arms and fight the government. I really don't want to live through that again. I really do not. I've seen it. And it scares me. I mean, it would scare anyone to have to live through that.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That's dangerous. It is. I mean, like, the closest thing we've ever had to that was here in Seattle, the WTO protest. And I forgot when that was. I think that was like 98 or 99 or something. And they just tore up the city. And I was out of the Guardian Angels at that time because I was part of the Seattle branch. And, you know, and luckily all we dealt with were drunks and, you know, people swinging boards and, you know, and junk like that. We never, you know, we never had to deal with the protest because I think by then the Guardian Angels in Seattle were already disbanded. So, I mean, I salute you for that because being in the thick of that, that's I would go ape. Pardon my French. I would go ape shit.
I
see what you're doing. That's awesome.
Up to 12 different languages.
What's that? Say again?
I speak up to bits and pieces of up to 12 different languages. Nothing fluent except for Lakota.
Oh, yeah, I can pretty much only ask to use the bathroom in Japanese, Chinese, and it's funny, I'm Filipino, and I can't speak the language to save my life, but...
I feel honored to be on the phone, actually, with a fellow former Guardian Angel, and I got to ask you, do you remember the old Curtis Gliwa saying, how do you feel?
You know...
Do you remember what he said?
No, I don't, because I only met him like maybe I can count on one hand, like maybe five times, and we never got we got the get out there and you know, but we never got the you know how do you feel? But I don't remember what he said. What did he say?
Well, whenever there was a Guardian Angel convention, he would always say, how before we would go out for patrol or we would do mock situation training or self-defense training, he would turn around and ask, how do you feel? And the entire group, you're talking about 2,000 Guardian Angels all yelling at once, like a brick.
Awesome. You know, I never had the chance to go to the big conventions. I know a couple of our patrol leaders got to go. And I just kind of stuck around because I was 17 going on 18 at the time when I joined. And, you know, my parents would be like, no, we're not going to give you like this much money to go to go to a convention. And I'm like, ah, so I missed out. But it was a great learning experience. But to tell you the truth, I don't know what I would have done if I was in a similar situation as the LA riots. You know, I'm pretty sure I would have stuck with the group and remained in formation and remained calm, but I think I might have, like, inside shit a brick. How do you feel? Like a shit brick.
The LA riots had a bad situation here. I requested a transfer to the San Francisco chapter, and a little while after transferring, an earthquake hit. And... here I was 19 years old, and when the earthquake hit, I was doing patrol in a building, and it was me and another guardian angel who was 18. We were taking the elevator up, and it stopped. And there was this pregnant woman in the elevator with us, and she went into labor. And we had to deliver the baby in the elevator.
Aww.
So when we went back to the base station, me and my partner were walking back to the base station with no shirts or jackets on.
Because
we had to wrap the baby up and do a little bit of cleaning and everything. But, you know, an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old delivering a baby, that was the scariest thing that I ever had to deal with. And, you know, I'd rather leave that for the doctors. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I'd rather be back in the L.A. riots than here and trapped in this elevator delivering a baby.
Wow.
that you know, that lady, I'm sure, just so lucky to have you two happen to be in the elevator, because a lot of people would just, like, freak, you know. What do I do? Ah, boiled water. You're in an elevator. You're not going to have boiled water. And you guys may do. And there's an adult out there now that is here because of you guys. And that's kudos, man. I love it. That's awesome.
She was her child, John, or something like that. But she came back to the base station wanting to meet us, the two that delivered her baby.
Mm-hmm.
And all the baby, everything. I was, you know, 19 years old. I haven't had kids yet. I didn't start having kids until I was 22. She said she changed her mind on naming it John or whatever it was, and she named her child Angel after the guardian angel.
Aww. Aww.
It is very rare that a person comes up with us in any sort of way for the job that we do. And a lot of times our work, you know, or the guardian angel's work, because I'm retired, the guardian angel's work goes unappreciated. They do a lot in the community, a whole lot. And it's really upsetting when people, you know, thugs walk past us and spit on us, call us names and everything. But understand that even though they choose to be our enemy, even though if they get into a situation where they are in danger, we don't play the games of where you're our enemy, we hate you, we're not doing nothing for you. The guardian angels will still go out there and help the punks that call us names. Because the guardian angels don't discriminate against people because they call us names.
Exactly. And I'm glad that you put that out there. There's people out there that have not heard of the guardian angels. And it was a, you know, I remember when I was like 17 and on patrol, and we would get it all the time, even from the local police, you know. We'd be called vigilantes, and we'd get spit on, or, you know, the punks had come out of nowhere. What are you going to do? You going to beat me up? What are you going to do? You know, and it's kind of like, you know, no, move on. There's nothing to see here. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
The guardian angels prepared me for one thing well in advance for things that I deal with nowadays. There are a tiny few people out there that call me a fake and a fraud and all that stuff. And these are what we call internet trolls.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people, when they're dealing with the internet trolls, they become foul, you know, they become verbally aggressive towards them. And I rarely ever become verbally aggressive towards them. I always stay polite. I try to answer the questions, or if it's a question that's been answered too many times and they're just constantly answering it over and over again just to try and annoy me, then I'll ignore the question. But one of the other things that I learned in the Guardian Angels, too, is that sometimes if you choose to, you can be polite and a little condescending at the same time. So that's the things I do. If I will say something very politely and very in a very intelligent manner, in order to make them stop and think, and then they turn around and realize, wait a minute, is he being rude to me, or is he being polite? Wait a minute, he's being rude to me.
Wait a minute, he just dissed me. But, you know, the majority of the trolls out there, and that's kind of my next question, is that, you know, given given your rank and given the style. I mean, you know, if you put the words grandmaster and ninjutsu together, there's always going to be some troll out there that's going to, you know, try to call you out, you know, and most likely they have no martial art training whatsoever, or have only seen ninjutsu on TV or in the movies and stuff. And, you know, because in the past I've had to deal with it too, but it's like, how do you, other than being nice to them and killing them with kindness, are there any other tips that you would have for any other martial artists out there to deal with trolls?
Well, there is for one thing, to start with, there are some support groups out there that deal with cyberbullying in general. I mean, there's Stop Cyberbullying Awareness and a few others that are on Facebook, you know, groups. And, you know, if you're being bullied in any shape or fashion over the Internet, definitely ask to join their group, because there's these people who are all victims and they're all helping each other with advice on how to deal with this. One of the things that I'm currently doing, and Facebook is probably going to hate me for this, but I'm going to go ahead and say it, is anytime I see an advertisement on Facebook, I will message them saying, I will refuse to purchase your product or subscribe to your program until a more aggressive action has been taken by Facebook against cyberbullying. So, look at it. If you have a TV show on, say like Jerry Springer, this happened in the mid-90s in Boise, Idaho. Jerry Springer, which had appeared on Jerry Springer when I was 19, I was paid to go on there, just to let you know. I was paid to do some acting. It wasn't real. But Jerry Springer was being aired at a time in Boise, Idaho, right after time that kids are getting out of school. And a lot of parents complained to the TV station saying, we're not going to purchase your products that you air on your commercials until you move Jerry Springer to a later hour. So the TV station had a panic and said, okay, well, we got to change it to a later hour because our advertisers are where we get our money. So the advertisers for Facebook get their money from, or the Facebook gets their money from advertisers. So if more people complain to the advertiser saying, I'm not going to purchase your product because of this reason, until you do something about cyberbullying on Facebook, then Facebook may just wake up and make some changes. Another thing is that can be pushed in the courts is if you save the discussions or the things that people say about you on the Internet, the vulgar things, you know, copy-paste it, print it off, however, and save it for court. A lot of people seem to think that in the Constitution it says freedom of speech, meaning that you can say whatever the heck you want. But if you look a little bit closely in more detail at the Constitution, it says freedom of speech, with the exception of profanity, threats of physical violence, or harassment. Those three things not covered under the Constitution. It says those things are not allowed by the Constitution. So use knowledge with a copy of the information that you've saved on the people harassing you, stalking you on the Internet, whatever, and taken into court, you have a little bit more stronger chance of winning your case by showing the evidence and then turning around and stating what it actually says in the Constitution about harassment and stalking and making threats and profanity.
Very cool.
Another thing that works for a lot of people is to not engage them. If you don't engage them, then eventually they're going to lose interest in you, and they're going to move on to someone else before. Because what they're looking to do is to inflate their own ego because they have been wronged in some way in their youth, and they're now lashing out on others that they feel that they can victimize.
Yeah. It's like the other day I was on a forum, and we were talking about science, and there's this one guy that was completely just I'm trying to say this without cussing. He was basically tearing this guy a new one, tearing another guy a new one. And I got on and I'm like, oh, come on. You know, so what you're saying now is that scientists are, you know, low ego or like, you know, fragile ego, blah, 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 or whatever. And then he started on me and I'm like, oh boy, here we go. Don't go there. But it's hard. It's hard though. You know, that's what a lot of people say is that, you know, don't engage them, but sometimes it's hard, especially when they start getting, getting personal and they start going into your profile and like digging into your stuff. And then you're like, you know, stop.
Yeah.
Oh man.
That we get to see in cyberbullies. And I think that level of maturity is somewhere around the age of maybe 12.
Yeah. I agree.
For me, what I do is they talk their trash. I just continue doing what I love to do, which is to teach. I mean, I've got students that are, you know, from all over the world that train under me through an internet program that I've been building. You have some of them, I guess, on the line right now. My niece being one of them, Jason being another one of them. And so I post up videos left and right, and I put them all over Facebook, you know, so that people can see them. And people will see the techniques. And one of the things I love is the greater majority of people will turn around and ask, you know, positive questions. Have you thought about trying doing this move with that or that? You know, and they get positive criticism. So, you know, when you're doing good stuff for the community and just doing what you love and it's positive, out of every one internet troll that you get, you're going to get at least 25 to 50 people that are going to be positive, that are going to contact you and say positive things, as long as you remain to be positive. I mean, because one of the things that showed that I'm trying to put out a positive image is that not only just for myself, but to try and spread it, is I will post things on my Facebook wall of sayings about peace, you know, things from the Dalai Lama or from the Bible or whatever, you know, and put it in a way that it fits people of all religion or no religion, and I treat everyone equally, no matter what their religious, sexual preferences or their political preferences. And I tell them, I don't care what your beliefs are about religion, politics, sexual beliefs, whatever. But my message to you is, let's just treat each other with respect. And, you know, and I say it in so many different ways over the internet, and I think it's starting to spread because the streets are becoming more and more violent. I'm seeing videos all the time about how cops are becoming more violent and extending pushing their authority too much. You know, these cops that do that, those are just those individuals. We cannot look at every police officer or every soldier or every individual as a whole for the population of that organization or group of people. But I'm getting really tired of seeing all the negativity that's going on out there, so I'm really trying to push for more peace and people to just sit down and talk. I mean, there's some people that are trying to push me into a fight with another martial artist who also studies ninjutsu but of a different style. And what I've stated is, you want to sit down and have coffee, we'll have coffee. You want to fight, go somewhere else. You come to me trying to pick a fight, I'm going to call the police. I'm not going to waste my time playing games. And that's what I recommend that people do. Don't try and get into a fight with a person. Never underestimate someone that is trying to be your enemy. The law is there to protect us. Use the law. If you're being someone is trying to attack you, call the police. Report it.
Very cool. I'm hoping.
Yeah, martial arts is for what a lot of people, a lot of these internet trolls are failing to understand. Martial arts is about self-defense and self-preservation and the preservation of others around you, not to be used in a fashion to go and beat people up just to show how tough you are. You want to do that, then do it in a safe environment like I used to, in the ring. I didn't go into the ring to show how tough I was. I went in the ring to see if I was good enough to handle myself against someone who had as good a skill as me or greater. I'm not saying I'm the best martial artist in the world. I'm old. But just to see if I'm capable of being able to do that, too, so I could be able to have the confidence to say, yes, on the streets, if someone does come up and attack me, I have a stronger feeling that I'm going to be able to survive this. Not to turn around and say, well, I can do this, I can beat them up and all that stuff. No, just to have the confidence that I will be able to handle myself. And also the same thoughts as I had in the ring. God, I hope I make it through this. I hope I don't get beat up too bad. And let me tell you, there's many times in the ring I came out looking like I got hit by Mack Truck.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I'm really glad that that you gave that advice, because, you know, I've got students that are dealing with bullying, too. And I've given them a lot of the same advice, but you know how it is, like, it's like hearing advice from your mom, you know, if you hear it from, like, you know, your teacher that you've been around for so long or whatever. And, you know, I just wanted to make sure that everyone out there hears that, because you're right, the cyberbullying epidemic is just, like, getting worse, you know, as the years go by, now that people can yell at each other behind their keyboards and, you know, become what I call the couch warriors. And stuff like that.
We call them people warriors. Now, for kids that are being bullied in school, martial arts is a great thing for them to learn, but one of the things that I teach the kids that I teach is if you're in a situation at school where a kid is trying to bully you face-to-face, try and walk away from the situation. Tell a teacher, tell a principal, tell your parents, tell the truancy officer, whatever. But if he comes up and starts swinging on you, you know, try and avoid swinging back, because then that gets you into more trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when school, the fight breaks out, kids like to gather and watch. Like, oh, fight,
mm-hmm.
fight. And, I ask my students to try not to swing back, but instead to try and deflect the blows, try and move out of the way of the blows. Chuck Norris, like, I got to meet him a long time ago at a baseball game, a Dodgers game. My dad, he sat down in front of me and my dad, and he was wearing a cowboy hat. My dad is from Brooklyn, my adopted father. And he said, do you mind taking off your freaking hat? You know, with the foul language. So the guy turns around, the guy says, oh, I'm sorry, and my dad turned pale white. And from there, he asked if he could take me around the stadium and meet some of the players and everything like that. So I got to hang out with Chuck Norris as a little kid. But he had said, he had said that the best defense is to not be there. So I teach my students how to dodge. So we play a lot of dodgeball with the little exercise foam balls, the ones that you put in your hand. And I will have the kids' students stand across the room from each other and throw foam balls at each other, and they have to dodge it and pick it up and throw it back.
Mm-hmm.
And this teaches how to dodge blows, because if you look at a ball, when it's flying through the air, depending upon the weight, it can travel up to 95 miles per hour. Anywhere between 35-95 miles per hour, depending upon the weight. So a punch, when a professional fighter can swing a punch at approximately anywhere between 35 to 50 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can dodge a small ball flying at you at 95 miles per hour, then you can dodge a fist. So just teach the kids that I train is to try and dodge the blows, move out of the way of it, block it, but not if at all possible not to swing them. And if it becomes too much, then try and detain them. This way here, when the principal and the teachers come over and ask what happened, then your kid can turn around and say, well, you can ask the other kids at school. I didn't swing a punch. I blocked. I moved out of the way. And maybe I detained him because I didn't want to be hurt by him.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, we'll open a little investigation and everything like that. You know, and a lot of schools nowadays, like in the bigger cities, they have cameras now, so they can also review the videotape.
Mm-hmm. Very cool advice. Love it. Absolutely love it. And I hope our listeners with kids or the younger listeners out there are taking Grandmaster Dan's advice to heart. All right. So for our listeners out there, if you have any questions for Grandmaster Dan Harmon, give us a call, 347-677-0699. Sifu Bob, do you have any questions for Grandmaster Dan? Bob? Bob?
Damn you.
There you are.
There I am. I'm talking, but nobody's answering me.
I'm here.
Yeah, Dan, how did you fare studying in Japan? Because traditionally wasn't, and of course you're Caucasian, but traditionally wasn't ninjutsu taught from family member to family member to family member. Now you're not only Caucasian, you're not part of their family. How did you fare? Was it a strange environment to train in, or did you fare really well? Tell us about it.
Well, I've only tested in Japan, but it was a little awkward. I mean, because you're correct. The Hanzawa family, Kogimo Hanzawa, had only planned on training his family, his kids, his wife, and cousins and siblings. But there was this one kid, he's all grown up now, he's about a year or two old, I mean, Mark Romano, who his family was doing something for the same law firm that Kogimo had worked. And they lived next door to each other and everything, and Mark Romano showed a great interest in martial arts. And there was a lot of, I guess kind of resentment at first, saying, well, how dare you try and pick up off of our moves or whatever. But eventually Kogimo decided to start teaching them. And then when I met Mark Romano when I was 15 in Children's Baptist Home, he saw that I had the same level of love for martial arts, because at that time I was studying Taekwondo, kickboxing, and boxing all at the same time. So he started showing me a few techniques from there, and then eventually started teaching me full on. So when he introduced me to the Hanzawa family, they were a little standoffish as well, as just like they were with Romano at first. And he kept sending videotapes over to the Hanzawa family saying, look, you really got to see this guy. He's really good. He even showed my level of capability of being able to pick up on moves. He had put a comic book in front of me, Daredevil, and said, all right, have you ever read this comic book before? And I was like, no, I've heard of the character. But I want you to take every technique that you see in the comic book and demonstrate it in front of the camera. So I had demonstrated 8 different ways that I was able to learn martial arts, just reading a technique, being able to do it, looking at pictures, being able to do it, look at a comic book, which doesn't even give you the full description on how to do the technique, listening to how to do it, being shown how to do it, watching a movie, and then suddenly being able to do it. And then they sent this video. We sent this video off to the Hanzawa family, and they turned around and said, all right, we'll train them. They sold videotapes, started going back and forth, me demonstrating how to do the techniques out there. They sent me a tape on how to do it, and finally I got to meet the Hanzawa family. That was a really difficult situation for me, because when I got there, I don't know hardly any Japanese at all. Asked me to read kanji, it looks like scribbles to me, so I don't know what it says. I mean, it looks cool, but it looks like scribbles to me, and it's the same as probably for them to read English. Kogimo Hanzawa did not know how to speak English at all. It was his youngest son, Hideyuki Hanzawa, who we call Yuki, is the one that knew how to speak English fluently. So he would translate on the page for us. When I got out there, he had to translate for us for his father and the rest of the family. But I got to stay with the Hanzawa family and everything like that. And I finally got to learn even greater, more about what it's like to be in the Japanese culture. There was one point that I was walking down the street with his daughter, and I had her walking on the right-hand side of me, and all of a sudden, he comes running out of his law office what are you doing? Are you too big? And blah, blah, blah. And his daughter was explaining to me what he was saying. And I was like, no, we're not dating. He's like, then why is she on the right-hand side of you? She should be on the left-hand side. I'm like, why does that matter?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
So I learned that if you're walking in Japan, I mean, I don't know how true it is or anything like that, but this is what I was told to me by him, is if you're walking on with a woman on the right-hand side of you, it means that you two are a couple, whereas here in the United States, if the woman walks on the inside, well, I guess that's not how it is in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to learn a lot about culture, and I live by that culture today, which some of my family members may think is strange because I'm a quarter, I guess, Chickasaw,
mm-hmm.
and the rest I'm a white boy. But my family's really into the Native American culture. I think you got my niece on the line. You could even ask her about that. So, I mean, you know.
No, your niece is gone, actually.
Huh?
Your niece is gone, actually.
Oh, she is? Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's in my family. It's a little strange that I'm so much into the Japanese culture. And the way my family is if I'm with someone that has a grasp of the Native American culture and lives by it a little bit, then you're in. If you don't understand the Native American culture, even a quarter percent, then, well, we're just going to have to teach you.
Now, I read, Dan, that, you know, and of course this is from a biography that you didn't write.
Right.
I had read, when you started going to Japan, you were, of course, coming from an abusive home. Your friends were covering for you, saying that you were camping or whatever. Now, see, that's the difference.
Yeah.
If you're going over to a friend's house and you're really going out onto a date and you're telling them you're going over to this friend's house, there's a difference than being, you know, 6,000 miles away.
Yeah, it is. I was doing forms competitions at first and then got bored with that and moved into full contact competitions, which, you know, is illegal. So it was illegal matches held by, you know, some Japanese people out in Japan. The camping trip, telling my parents that I was going camping, the way my parents were, especially my dad, any way that he could get rid of me, he was happy with. I mean, one time he even left me at Knott's Berry Farm, and the staff called the police on him, and the police told him, you do this again, I'm taking you to jail. You know, they told my dad this. So my family, my adopted family, really didn't have much love for me because I wouldn't conform to their militant style of life. So any time that I was away from the house for a long period of time, they were happy. So telling them that I was going camping was a good cover story. And I had two friends, they were twins, Jose and Mario Paziga, that lived just two blocks down the road from me. And they went camping a lot. So I would turn around and tell them, well, I got to go overseas again. Can you cover for me, do the usual thing that I've gone camping? And mind you, they're Hispanic. My mother didn't speak hardly any English at all. So any time that my parents would call up over at Jose and Mario's house, they would get their mom. And my dad doesn't speak any Spanish. So it got to a point eventually where he decided, well, okay, he's gone camping. I'm not going to call up some Mexican lady. And my dad was pretty racist. I'm not racist at all, but my dad was very racist. So I'm not going to call up some Mexican woman that can't even speak English here in America, learn how to speak and blah, 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 you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he just let it go. Now, to get from America to Japan by freight ship averages about a 13-day trip.
Right.
So I would be on this ship for 13 days, bored out of my mind, just practice just to pass time or take coloring books with me, whatever. And then I'd be there for like a day or 2 days and compete and then be back on the freight ship on my way back home. And every time I'd go and do this, I would take camping gear with me. My dad would pack it up for me and everything. He would have a smile on his face because I know what he's thinking is, yes, finally, I'm getting rid of him for a month. And you would think that I'm going camping. I'd go over to Jose and Mario's house, and they would get excited because, oh, we got this camping gear we can borrow. So they would literally go camping. After the first time of doing this and seeing how long I'm gone, they would turn around and borrow the camping gear and then come try and make it back before I got back. There was one time I got back before they did, and I'm all like, well, where's my gear? Where's the twins? And their younger sister came and said, oh, they're out camping with your deer. Oh, okay, well, I guess I'm going to be staying here till they get back. My mom would be fine, and I'd be eating all this really delicious Mexican food and everything. There is nothing like true Mexican food. You can't find it at Taco Bell.
No kidding.
Awesome. Now, you know, I want to hear from Jason. Jason, thanks for being so patient. You've been so quiet, but I want to hear from you now. How long have you been training with Grandmaster Harmon, and how do you like your training? Tell us a little bit about training.
Grandmaster Harmon is awesome. He has a very good system. I've been training in martial arts for a good part of my life. I'm 34 years old. I've been doing it for 28 years. But Sensei Harmon, his system is one of the best that I found.
Right on. And, what are classes like? Without giving away like the system, you know, what are just some things that you guys work on? I mean, basics, weapons. How does that work?
I'm on the internet program with them on the online training, but we're starting out with like lunches and basic self defense.
Oh, very cool.
With a test and fan and, you know, basic ninjutsu concepts.
Oh, awesome. Very
yeah.
cool. So, Grandmaster Dan, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
One of the things that I really like to put in with my training program, which a lot of martial artists don't do, is they will say, well, if you kick this way, and I think you might agree with me on this too, Jason, from the training
yeah.
manual that I sent you, dealing with the test then, is they'll turn around and say, well, if you kick the knee in this way here, it can break the kneecap. One of the things that they fail to do is they fail to recognize what other damage happens to the knee. You know, what about the arteries, the tendons, the muscle tissue, how many pounds per pressure needs to be applied, what angle does it need to be applied, what is the velocity that needs to be used. And I think Jason, you might be able to go into what has been your experience on reading the training manuals and how it's helped you to give you a better grasp on how seriously dangerous martial arts can be now that you see it from this perspective from the training manuals that I sent you.
Ooh, that'd be great.
Yeah, I would never use any technique unless it's definitely life and death. Situation because, I mean, what Sensei Harmon teaches can be very dangerous, and, you know. So, I mean, I would highly recommend anyone to only use it for self-defense because it's very effective.
Very cool. Right now, how long were you on, have you been doing his internet program again? I'm sorry, I missed that.
About 6 months.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. That's awesome. So, like, for internet program, is it like a? Because I'm actually thinking of doing this for my Tai Chi students that have moved to the west to the East Coast. How do I put this? Is it on the internet where Grandmaster Dan? Do you like post stuff privately on the internet, and then each person just gets their own like code to get into their lesson, or is it like one-on-one, like via Skype, or I'd like to know for me, because I want to do this with my students too.
What I do is I just post up videos on YouTube, and the way I do it is there's like 7 different channels now. So many techniques of this piece of the program, like with the clinch, maybe on one channel, and so many more maybe on another channel. So you know, the way it's set up is that a person going to just one channel, they're going to think that that's all there is unless they go to another one and they see there's more. But the how I do it is you contact me on Facebook or call me up, and I try and find out what your income is like, you know, not knowing exactly what your income is, you know, asking exactly what it is, but, you know, what bracket are you in, and try and set up a financial setting for the individual to fit them, because when I was learning martial arts for life, I've never had to pay for any training or anything like that, because I found people that took me in, you know, expert martial arts, anywhere from black belt on up, obviously, that were willing to take me in. And I think it was more of a pity factor on me, because I, every time they would see me, I'd have bruises on me, and they knew it came from my dad. So, you know, it's based off of income mostly. And but even if they're multimillionaires, I still charge no more than $50, because to me, it's not about making money. For me, it's about the love of teaching. Yeah, I need to make some money, because I got a lot of traveling I have to do all the time. But it's more so about passing on knowledge that can help them. And another thing with the internet program that I do is it gives you that unique opportunity where you're able to contact me and say, well, I've not sure if I got this technique right. Here's a video of me doing it. Can you tell me, you know, if I'm doing anything wrong? Can you give me advice, so on and so forth? But if they're not a student of mine, you know, if they're not in my records as a student, then I'll turn around and tell them, well, this is what you got wrong on it, but I will not give them advice on how to fix it, because the techniques, some of the techniques that I use that I pass on are techniques from a rare system called DMMOC. Now, a lot of people think that DMMOC is where you touch a person and they're paralyzed. No, it's much more realistic than that. It's not like what's in movies. DMMOC is where, for example, and I'm going to ask all the listeners to never do this. If you have an opponent down on the ground on their back, if you punch them three times consecutively, which takes approximately 0.15 seconds or less, if you punch them in the sternum three times consecutively, you can cause a cardiac arrest. Because what's happening is you're not hitting the heart. What it is, you're hitting the stomach, which if you squeeze on the stomach, it's like a balloon. It's going to expand in other areas. If it expands in other areas, it's going to put pressure on the diaphragm, which is going to create pain and create problems for the lungs to suck in air, because the diaphragm is a muscle for the lungs. Therefore, it's going to, the lungs will then put pressure on the heart. So if you punching the sternum three times consecutively, that is create an immense amount of pressure on the heart and the lungs, which, you know, when you get punched in the sternum, you have that problem where you got trouble catching your breath, your heart is hurting. Well, that happening three times within 0.15 seconds.
Wow. Man. I've gotten kicked in the solar plexus only once, and it felt like what it would have felt like if I had a heart attack. But then again, I was 13 when I got kicked in the solar plexus. I can't imagine that sensation three times over. That would be a heart attack.
Also, you know, it's you and your husband on the line. Here's something else that is also not well known. That is the DMMOC, which I teach in my form of ninjutsu, is I'm going to ask you the question that I ask my students. Who is going to feel more pain if they were to be kicked in the crotch, you or your husband?
Oh, you're asking us?
Yes.
Bob's not my husband.
No,
your co-host. No, I'm in LA. She's in Seattle.
Oh, okay.
But Robert, go ahead and answer that.
Me. Every answer is going to be me.
Wrong. It'll be her. Because male reproductive organs only have 4 nerve endings, whereas the female reproductive organs have 18 nerve endings.
See, I keep trying to tell guys that when we fall on bicycles, it hurts just as much. And the guys say, no, it doesn't. And I'm like, well, how do you know?
Yeah, I know. They think that it's because of the testicles, and yeah, no, that doesn't work.
And then, you know, and they keep saying, you know, it doesn't hurt women more. And I'm like, well, we got, like, all sorts of stuff that's a lot closer to stuff. Like, I don't know.
Women have 18 nerve endings within the reproductive organs so that they not only feel pleasure, but also so that they know when it's time to give birth. Men have 4 nerve endings so that they can feel pleasure, and at the same time, so that the brain can send the message down to the appropriate area. I'm not going to say it over here. We know what that appropriate area is. To release the seed to create pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why.
Dan, with that, I don't know if I believe that entirely, because do you know how many times I've been told I think with that area? So I think that sends them. That sends thoughts up to my brain.
That's okay. You got to look at it from a medical standpoint. 18 nerve endings compared to 4 nerve endings.
Right. So, yeah, so hers is going to hurt a lot worse. I'll have to remember that the next time she just pisses me off.
I mean, because you think about it. When you get kicked in the crotch, you feel it in as high as up as the lower stomach, whereas a woman, because there's the uterus, the fallopian tubes, and so on and so forth, and there's nerve endings going all wrapping all around that, she feels it higher up in the stomach. She feels it all up there.
Oh, yes, we do.
Lower down.
Oh, God, I thought for sure I was going to, like, puke the last time I fell on the bar of a bicycle. I was just like, are you serious? This can't – I thought it was just me, but, you know, it's kind of nice to have that justification that it hurts, but, whew,
yeah.
Man. Well, but, see, but now Bob has a weapon against me now.
One of the things that I try to get across to all of my students around the world is how fragile the human body really is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the collarbone only takes 7 pounds of pressure to break, whereas the ribs take only 150 pounds of pressure to break. Now, a sidekick can produce up to 400 pounds of pressure. So if you kick something in the ribs, that's 400 pounds of pressure that only takes 150 pounds to break.
Mm-hmm.
So the human body is very, very fragile, and I go into very minute detail with all my students about all this, you know, the physics, the medical science, and so on and so forth, so that they understand that if they really have to use this to understand, they are doing, you know, how much damage they really could do.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my techniques look like very basic techniques, but what a lot of people fail to see in my techniques is how I use my hips, how I use my foot, you know, the tiny little things within my body that produces more power.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Well, Dan, I was reading something that said that you were an expert in over 25 weapons. Yeah. Do you specialize in any weapons? I'm sorry?
I'm trained in something around that number. I mean, ninjutsu, you train in a wide variety of weapons, but the better way of calling, a better term for it would be called tools, because when you go to a job site, say like you're a construction worker, your tools, they're the tools of your trade. In martial arts, weapons are the tools of your trade. And ninjutsu, in true ninjutsu, you're not just learning how to use weapons as a weapon. You're also learning how to use things in your environment as a weapon, something as simple as a little thing of lipstick. I mean, a little thing of lipstick can be used the exact same way as a Kubotan. So the number of weapons that I'm trained in, I don't know the exact number. So whatever he said, I don't know if it's accurate or not. You know, the guy that wrote that bio. And in fact, I didn't even know the bio existed. Someone interviewed me, and they said they were going to do a bio on me and put it up on Wikipedia. And then there was some internet trolls that pointed out that I was in, I guess it's the Japanese form of Wikipedia, Google Wikipedia. I never knew it was up there. But I have showed, I have seen people on Facebook post pictures of where they have like 20 weapons in a picture, and most of the weapons were the same. And after a while, I got bored of it, so I laid out all of my weapons, all the ones that I could find, because they're stashed all over my house. And I started getting some responses back where people were saying, wow, that's three times more weapons than I have in my home and stuff like that. I got somewhere around $2,000 worth of weapons in my home, but that's on wholesale.
Okay.
That's not wholesale. We're probably looking at about $400,000, $500,000 in weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And that's including the training.
That's
so
awesome.
What weapons do you specialize in?
Huh?
What weapons do you specialize in?
Well, to be honest, that there is kind of a double-edged question. The weapon that I really love, which is traditional for those that are into the samurai culture, is the sword. I really love the sword, but I got a student who makes swords that can kick my butt. And I'm a grandmaster, apparently, but I have no shame in saying that there are people out there, even some of my own students, that are better at certain weapons than I am. And I taught him how to use a sword, and he's two times better than me. He kicks my butt every time now. The weapon that I least like is the nunchucks, but I seem to be the one of the biggest experts on nunchucks in the city of Colorado Springs. I have instructors that come to me periodically wanting to learn more on how to use the nunchucks on me. There's a few things that I've created myself on how to involving using the nunchucks that a lot of martial artists have not done. And one thing that I've seen videos, it's sad, where people try to mimic one demonstration that no one else seems to be able to duplicate. When it comes to nunchucks, I've started looking outside the box. That's what I do with everything, with every weapon, everything that I pick up. You know, even if it's a straw, I try to look outside the box and how this could be used for self-defense. With nunchucks, I started realizing, okay, I know all this stuff on grappling for standing up, but what about grappling on the ground? A lot of fights end up on the ground. So I started coming up with techniques on how to use nunchucks for grappling on the ground in a jiu-jitsu manner. Then the videos that I've seen where people were trying to copy me that were just sad, all I can say to you people out there, keep practicing. It took me and my students months to get the routine down. There was me and two of my students in my living room. We were facing each other in a triangle formation. You probably remember the triangle formation from Guardian Angels. This is a little reverse, but facing each other. And we're swinging the nunchucks around like a normal demonstration, and it's just one pair of nunchucks. And then in the middle of swinging the nunchucks around, we pass the nunchucks to each other. Now, nunchucks swing at full speed of 150 miles per hour. We're passing the nunchucks to each other. We're passing them to each other anywhere between 75 to 95 miles per hour.
Wow.
And we're passing each other, catching it, and then swinging them around, and then passing again, and swinging around ourselves and passing them again. And there's a YouTube video up there somewhere. This type of Dan C. Harmon triple nunchuck who passed on YouTube, and you would see this video. And I've seen people the videos and the people trying to do that demonstration, their videos didn't stay up very long for some reason. I guess maybe they're embarrassed, whatever, and they took them down. I don't know. They shouldn't be embarrassed because it took us months to get the routine down. And it's, mm-hmm. and it's very dangerous. It is very dangerous. You can break a finger quite easily doing it.
Yeah.
One of the students did break her hand during training. So, you know, we had to pause for a few months for her to get out of task. But it takes months to do demonstrations like that. Any kind of weapon where you're passing it to a partner like you're doing a juggling act, which is basically what we're doing, you can't just jump into it. You got to start off slow, and you got to practice it and practice it and practice it for months and gradually build up the speed. And we mm-hmm. built up this to a point where we felt, okay, this is good enough. Let's go ahead and post it up on YouTube and see what people think.
Very cool.
Unfortunately, nunchucks is not my favorite weapon, but it seems to be the one that I'm best at.
Okay.
It's funny. I'm the opposite. I like the nunchaku, but I can't. It's funny. It's like my wushu students like laugh at me. They go, "You can handle a three-sectional staff, but you can't handle a nunchaku." And I'm like, "Nope. I look like a dork."
I believe the same thing that that pagans believe when it comes to weapons. So pagans believe, you know, Wiccans, Nordic, Celtic, Druidic. Mm-hmm. They believe that the crystal or the wand or whatever item they use in the ritual chooses them, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the weapon chooses you. You don't choose the weapon. I mean, you can love the weapon as much as you want, but it doesn't mean that you're going to be an expert at it. And I'm certainly not an expert at the source. I know quite a bit, but I'm not. I wouldn't classify myself an expert, but there are some people out there that apparently do. I mean, the guy, Dustin, he's a student of mine that kicks my butt every time with the kendo sticks. He says I'm an expert at the sword because I taught him so much on it, more than what he had learned in the SCA, which is a medieval reenactment group.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I wish we could talk a little bit longer, but my on-air board says we only have 2 minutes until our live feed is gone. It'll completely kick us off. So how can our listeners contact you the next time that they're in the Colorado area and they want to come by, say hi, or even take a class with you? How can we contact you?
Okay, you can contact me on Facebook. Let's see. There's a few Facebook accounts out there that are impersonating me.
Mm-hmm.
But I am listed on Facebook as Dan Harmon, and if you see a picture of a guy with long dark hair and a beard and a tall forehead with a black leather biker jacket on, that's mm-hmm. me.
Okay.
Or you can call 719-216-5169.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, I'm sorry that we only had had 2 hours for this particular podcast, and we thank you and Jason for joining us today. And I'm sorry Crystal dropped off. She dropped off kind of in the middle of the first half of your interview, unfortunately.
I got grand nieces and nephews, and one of them were probably crying.
Well, thank you again, Grandmaster, and
yes,
we hope to have you on
a
second time because I do want to get your take on PTSD and how it applies to self-defense. So we'd love to have you on a second time. So thank you again. And Bob, who do we have for next week?
We have Mr. Nick Palma next week. He was the original Michelangelo Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle in the first movies, when it was still run by Jim Henson.
Very cool. We're going to be talking with him next week, the original Michelangelo of the Ninja Turtles. Thank you again, Grandmaster Dan, and thank you, Jason, for joining us. And thank you, Bob, for being a wonderful co-host, as always. So we will see everybody next week with Nick. Did I get that right? Nick Palma? I'm getting my name.
P-A-L-M-A.
With Nick Palma. Thank you, Grandmaster Dan, Grandmaster Jason. We'll see you on Facebook, and we'll see the listeners next week. Bye-bye now.
Bye.